You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
In a recent Radio EcoShock interview with Dr. Guy McPherson, we learned maintaining a comfortable shelter for human bodies is a principal driver for the continuing use of fossil fuels. We create a lot of climate damage just to keep our homes cool in the heat and warm in winter. And despite a reputation as a coal-exporting country, Australia is stimulating better housing as a way to cut greenhouse gas emissions. With the farming industry and the fabulous barrier reef threatened, Australia has developed a nationwide house energy rating scheme. Our next guest is going to explain it and how he gained 9 out of 10 stars in his owner-designed home. John Morgan's Eco House is found in a rural area near Victoria in southeastern Australia. As we spoke at the end of June, John is dealing with the cold of the Australian winter. John, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
Well, by way of introduction, John, just to give us a peek, how much do you pay for electricity every month?
Well, I don't actually pay anything, Alex, and that's because I generate all my own electricity by means of a well-designed solar power supply, which is built into and on top of the house itself. So I am not connected personally to the national grid.
You are off the grid, and I want to talk about that solar power in detail. But first, I want to ask you, what made you decide to create an eco-friendly house?
It seems like I have generally had that kind of impulse going back quite some time. I suspect possibly early on, I'd found the idea of being dependent on others for things like electricity and water, which are, of course, the essentials of life. I found the idea of being dependent on others somewhat unsatisfactory. For example, you only have to have a major storm pass through a major city like Melbourne here in southeastern Australia, and as a result of that, many thousands of people can be without electricity for many hours or even a day or two in worst cases. This struck me early on as being a pretty unsatisfactory state of affairs, and that led me to look further into the matter. And I guess it was probably assisted by the fact that I worked as a teacher for a good many years, and the specialty that I used to do in the classroom was physics, electronics, mathematics, and things like that. So I was probably well primed to the business of looking into reliable and comfortable living. Once I started back in the 1960s, it more or less just grew from that. And over those years, I have designed and built four or five of ever-improving versions of this type of house.
Do you find the technology is getting easier to get to do what you want to do?
Yes, I am finding that, Alex. The technology is evolving in a great number of ways, and better still, the cost of this technology is actually going down.
Right, unlike most things which are going up. I find it critical that you mentioned water use. I remember just a couple of years back when the choice was whether to deliver water to the major city of Adelaide or let farmers use it for crops in the Murray-Darling River Basin. And there's new regulations again last year in 2011 about how much the farmers can use. So it would be a very big deal if city dwellers used much less water. How does your house and this energy rating scheme accomplish that?
The key to success here, Alex, was that I have made the decision to ensure that I'm fully independent. And so it turns out that I'm living on a fairly large property. I'm outside of the town. I'm nowhere near an urban development at all. I'm on 20 acres. I'm on fairly close to the top of a hill, and the property is well exposed to the weather, and that means that, in effect, any water I need simply falls out of the sky. I have 136 square metres of roof space to collect it, and so every millimetre of rain delivers me 136 litres of water. This, of course, goes into storage tanks, and as of today, I have 40,000 litres of fresh water stored in two tanks. The situation with electricity is much the same. Every day, the sun comes up quite reliably, has done for billions of years. And even though a day like today, the radiation intensity is not much, the sun shines every day, and I have 3 kilowatts solar panel capacity on the roof of the house, and I collect current from these panels that gets stored in a battery which is inside the house. The battery is quite large, and as of this morning, I have at least 3 or 4 days of stored electricity in the battery that will see me out until the next bright sunny day turns up. So it works on that basis that I have structured the whole enterprise in such a way that it is fully self-sufficient, and the house itself has been designed in such a way that its electricity demand is extremely modest. For example, for the 3.5 years I've been here, the average daily electrical consumption is 5 kilowatt hours. And my solar array on the roof is well large enough to supply that with plenty left over.
What about heating when it gets cold? How are you heating the place?
That's the most interesting question of all, Alex, because the house does not have an inbuilt heater. It depends upon the sun outside to shine in sufficiently to warm us up. But there's a little bit more to it than that, which I should explain. I have designed the house to make the most of the 3 well-known qualifications for good design. I refer to glazing, insulation, thermal mass. So what happens here, this house is designed as a brick veneer house with the brickwork on the inside of the house, whereas in Australia there is a long-standing custom to build a house with brickwork on the outside and then a timber wall inside with plasterboard or timber lining for the finishing. So I've gone against that trend. I've switched it inside out, so to speak. On the inside of the house, I have masonry walls, and the role of the masonry walls is to store heat and to stabilise the temperature excursions that you might normally expect between hot and cold conditions. And so, at the moment, the brickwork on the inside of my home here has had a good amount of thermal energy embedded in it during the first 6 months of the year, during the warm period and then the autumn season leading into winter. The energy to do this comes from the sun, and I've arranged things so that the exposure of the windows to sunlight is able to optimise the intake of radiation, and we're able to build a significant amount of heat into the fabric of the building, which has the effect of tiding us over during the colder months. But on top of that, the real key to success is the fact that the external walls of the house, the outside timber frame walls, these are very heavily insulated. The roof of the building is also heavily insulated with something of the order of 8 inches of good insulation embedded in between the ceiling and the roof. The windows are all double glazed, and in the winter months like now, I have a set of screens made of one of the well-known block-out fabrics that I can attach to the windows internally, and they act as an additional layer of insulation. So that turns what initially was a double-glazed window into a triple-glazed window. So I get radiation in from the sun, and I keep the energy that comes with that in the house by very heavy insulation. And oddly enough, it does work. I don't actually have a heater in the house.
No furnace at all?
No furnace at all.
That's probably the way we're all going to have to go eventually, especially as fossil fuels just get more and more expensive. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. I'm talking with John Morgan about his super energy-efficient house in southeastern Australia. John, what about the cost? Is the Australian 9-star plan, is it just for millionaires, really?
Interesting question, Alex. With this particular house, I made the decision right at the beginning that this house would probably be seen as some kind of an example. And so I decided that I would spend no money at all on architectural features. I would design a place that was completely featuring the requirements of comfortable living and completely ignore architectural merit or anything of that sort. And so the place does not look much. I'm first to concede that. It's a little white box on the hill, exposed to nature's gifts in the form of wind and rain and sun. And as a result of taking this slightly down-market approach, I was able to produce a plan that was relatively cheap to build. Even after I added the cost to the house, the cost of the power supply, the standalone power supply, and the water tanks and all that goes with that, the total cost of building this thing in 2008 was somewhere around $165,000. Now, the Australian dollar and the US dollar are pretty much the same at the moment, so your listeners would be able to take that number at face value. And as modern housing goes, that is a very cheap building.
It is indeed. And, you know, you talked about not being dependent on the system, and it seems to me right now, I don't know about in Australia, but certainly over in Europe and here in North America, there's a lot of worrying economic news. We may be heading into a serious depression. We don't know, but you could sit that out with few bills to pay and still be quite comfortable. That would be worth more than gold to me. How do you feel about that?
Yes, I have given that matter some thought, Alex. It is clear that the commercial world is in a real shambles at the moment. You have the Europeans who are in a very bad shape in relation to the monumental debts that they have allowed to grow up. You've got the people of Greece, for whom I have great concerns because it looks like there's going to be widespread poverty in Greece, and it can't be ruled out that something similar is likely to happen elsewhere in Europe. I'm not very familiar with the Canadian situation, but I am aware that the Americans are in a fair amount of financial trouble with regard to their budget deficit. And you can see that the American economy is recovering, perhaps, but in very, very slow degrees. And the Lord knows how long it'll take for America to get really back on its feet. And so it's very interesting because one of the characteristics of this house that I've built here fits into this sphere of thinking. I refer to the fact that on the northernmost corner of the house here, Alex, I have a greenhouse attached to the main building. This greenhouse is useful for the process I described a little earlier of providing hot air that I can pump into the main building as the greenhouse heats up each day. But not only that, this attached to greenhouse I am currently using to grow vegetables and also seedlings for planting out on the property, which is essentially rather bare, 20 acres of bare paddock that was originally for sheep grazing. I'm trying to turn this back into a small forest, and I'm growing a lot of seedlings in the greenhouse for propagation onto the land when they're ready. But the primary thing is that I'm growing food in the greenhouse, and although it is in its early stages yet, my planning goes along the lines that I will be able to produce a significant amount of fresh food for regular daily consumption in the house, adding even further to the independence issue and relieving somewhat the strain on the financial resources needed for survival. So although it wasn't planned in that particular context, the self-sufficiency thing that we're doing here does augur well if the crunch were to really come.
Right. It certainly can't hurt, and you will get the best food you can get. Instead of getting it from the industrial system, you can grow it yourself. Well, as we wrap up on this idea of a nine-star house, I've heard Australia also becomes the first country to implement a nationwide carbon tax as of July the 1st, is it?
I think we're not the first. There are carbon pricing policies in existence in most parts of Europe. In fact, I think many of the American states are doing it. I think California, for example, which is a fairly major economy in America, California has a viable carbon pricing scheme. They do tend to vary. Here in Australia, the carbon pricing policy comes into operation in about a fortnight. It begins officially on the 1st of July. And it's a very interesting mechanism, the way it's designed to work. It has sometimes been referred to here in Australia as a carbon tax, but the way it looks to me, it can't really be thought of a tax. When I think of a tax, I think of some kind of imposition applied to all taxpayers, and that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is there is a price being levied as a kind of penalty against some 300 major companies who are making their profits out of the process of generating carbon dioxide. I think in particular of fossil fuel power companies, aluminium smelters, iron ore type processing industries. And these people are being required to pay into a central fund an amount of $23 per tonne of carbon dioxide emitted. And the interesting thing about this is that this fund fairly soon builds up to a substantial amount, and the fund is used to compensate householders for any price rise that they experience as a result of this mechanism. For example, electricity suppliers will probably have to put their prices up to help cover the cost of the $23 a tonne, and that householders who do cop this price rise are being paid out of the fund to recompense them for that price increase. And it appears also that from this fund, the government will be in a position to invest in cleaner energy technologies that will also help towards the reduction in the levels of carbon dioxide emitted. So it looks like a promising idea, and it might even work. My own thinking was that this sort of thing was probably going to be a long time coming, and that by doing what I did personally here on top of a hill at Lexton, I have provided myself with a comfortable home. It is not dependent on carbon dioxide emissions from anywhere else, and it is in fact a zero emissions house. When the permits were issued, the analysis of the plan suggested that it qualified for an allocation of 9 stars on that particular rating scheme. Not that I was much interested in stars, I was more interested in a comfortable house to retire into.
Which we're all going to need, and I could see this as kind of a model, an inspiration for the building industry to do better around the world, because we're going to have to live without the fossil fuels. That's pretty obvious. We've been listening to John Morgan from Lexton in rural Victoria in southeastern Australia. He's built a 9-star house, an advanced eco-friendly home that could inspire better building around the world. Thank you for sharing with us, John.
I am delighted to meet you, Alex.
I am Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. You can download our programs from our website, ecoshock.org.